Vate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Well, I'll try to read as long as my voice holds out. So, reading prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb. And we're on page 25. I think it's a... I just start in the middle of the page. I think that's where we are, right? In the middle of that page, where it says, then the demigods addressed. Start there anyway. Okay, page 25. Then the demigods addressed the Lord as Satyam Param, or the Supreme Absolute Truth. Everyone is searching after the truth. That is the philosophical way of life. The demigods give information that the Supreme Absolute Truth is Krishna. One who becomes fully Krishna conscious can attain the Absolute Truth. Krishna is the Absolute Truth because, unlike relative truth, he is truth in all the three phases of eternal time. Time is divided into past, present, and future. Krishna is truth always, past, present, and future. In the material world, everything is being controlled by supreme time in the course of past, present, and future. But before the creation, Krishna was existing. And when there is creation, everything is resting in Krishna. And when this creation is finished, Krishna will remain. Therefore, he is the absolute truth in all circumstances. If there is any truth within this material world, it emanates from the supreme truth, Krishna. If there is any opulence within this material world, the cause of the opulence is Krishna. If there is any reputation within this material world, the cause of the reputation is Krishna. If there is any strength within this material world, the cause of such strength is Krishna. If there is any wisdom and education within this material world, the cause of such a wisdom and education is Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the source of all relative truths. I think we should count how many times Papa said Krishna. I think it was about 30 times just in that little paragraph. This material world is composed of five principal elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and all such elements are emanations from Krishna. The material scientists accept these five primary elements as the cause of the material manifestation. But the elements in their gross and subtle states are produced by Krishna. The living entities who are working within this material world are products of his marginal potency. In the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that the whole manifestation is a combination of two kinds of energies of Krishna, the superior energy and the inferior energy. The living entities are the superior energy, and the dead material elements are his inferior energy. In its dormant stage, everything remains in Krishna. The demigods continue to offer their respectful prayers unto the supreme form of the personality of Godhead Krishna by analytical study of the material manifestation. What is this material manifestation? It is just like a tree. A tree stands on the ground. Similarly, the tree of the material manifestation is standing on the ground of material nature. This material manifestation is compared to a tree because a tree is ultimately cut off in due course of time. A tree is called vriksha. Vriksha means that thing which will be ultimately cut off. Therefore, this tree of the material manifestation cannot be accepted as the ultimate truth because it is influenced by time. But Krishna's body is eternal. He existed before the material manifestation. He is existing while the material manifestation is continuing, and when it will be dissolved, he will continue to exist. Therefore, only Krishna can be accepted as the absolute truth. The Katha Upanishad also cites this example of the tree of the material manifestation standing on the ground of material nature. This tree has two kinds of fruits, distress, and happiness. Those who are living in the tree of the body are just like two birds. One bird is localized aspect of Krishna known as the Paramatma, and the other bird is the living entity. The living entity is eating the fruits of this material manifestation. Sometimes he eats the fruit of happiness, and sometimes he eats the fruit of distress. But the other bird is not interested in eating the fruit of distress or happiness because he is self-satisfied. The Katha Upanishad states that one bird on the tree of the body is eating the fruits, and the other bird is simply witnessing. The roots of this tree extend in three directions. This means that the root of the tree is the three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Just as the tree's roots expands, so by association of the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, one expands his duration of material existence. The tastes of the fruit are four kinds: religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and ultimately liberation. According to the different associations in the three modes of material nature, the living entities are tasting different kinds of religiosity, different kinds of economic development, different kinds of sense gratification, and different kinds of liberation. Practically all material work is performed in ignorance, but because there are three qualities, sometimes the quality of ignorance is covered with goodness or passion. The taste of these material fruits is accepted through five senses. The five sense organs through which knowledge is acquired are subjected to six kinds of whips: lamentation, illusion, infirmity, death, hunger, and thirst. This material body, or the material manifestation, is covered by seven layers: skin, muscle, blood, marrow, bone, fat, and semen. The branches of the tree are eight: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. There are nine gates in this body: the two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, one mouth, one genital, one rectum. And there are 10 kinds of internal air passing within the body: prana, apana, udana, vyana, samana, and so forth. The two birds seated in this tree, as explained above, are the living entity and the localized Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma. The root cause of the material manifestation described here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands himself to take charge of the three qualities of the material world. Vishnu takes charge of the mode of goodness, Brahma takes charge of the mode of passion, and Lord Shiva takes charge of the mode of ignorance. Brahma, by the mode of passion, creates this manifestation. Lord Vishnu maintains this manifestation by the mode of goodness, and Lord Shiva annihilates it by the mode of ignorance. The whole creation ultimately rests in the Supreme Lord. He is the cause of creation, maintenance, and dissolution. And when the whole manifestation is dissolved, in its subtle form, as his energy, it rests within his body. At present, the demigods prayed, "The Supreme Lord Krishna is appearing just for the maintenance of this manifestation." Actually, the supreme cause is one, but less intelligent persons, being deluded by the three modes of material nature, see that the material world is manifested through different causes. Those who are intelligent can see that the cause is one, Krishna. As it is stated in the Brahma Samhita, "Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sarva Karana Karanam." Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of all causes. Brahma is the deputed agent for creation. Vishnu is the expansion of Krishna for maintenance, and Lord Shiva is the expansion of Krishna for dissolution. "Our dear Lord," the demigods prayed, "it is very difficult to understand your actual form or personality. People in general are unable to understand your actual form. Therefore, you are personally descending to exhibit your original eternal form. Somehow people can understand the different incarnations of your lordship, but they are puzzled to understand the eternal form of Krishna with two hands moving among human beings exactly like one of them. This eternal form of your lordship gives ever-increasing transcendental pleasure to the devotees. But for the non-devotees, this form is very dangerous. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is very pleasing to the sadhus, paritranaya sadhunam. But this form is very dangerous for the demons because Krishna also descends to kill the demons. He is, therefore, simultaneously pleasing to the devotees and dangerous to the demons. Our dear lotus-eyed Lord, you are the source of pure goodness. There are many great sages who simply by samadhi or transcendentally meditating upon your lotus feet and thus being absorbed in your thought have easily transformed the great ocean of nations created by the material nature into no more than the water in a calf's hoofprint. The purpose of meditation is to focus the mind upon the personality of Godhead, beginning from his lotus feet. Simply by meditation on the lotus feet of the Lord, great sages cross over this vast ocean of material existence without difficulty. O self-illuminated one, the great saintly persons who have crossed over the ocean of nations by the help of the transcendental boat of your lotus feet have not taken away that boat. It is still lying on this side. If one takes a boat to cross over a river, the boat also goes with one to the other side of the river. And so when one reaches the destination, how can the same boat be available to those who are still on this side? To answer this difficulty, the demigods say in their prayer that the boat of the Lord's lotus feet is not taken away. The devotees still remaining on this side are able to pass over the ocean of material nature because the pure devotees do not take the boat with them when they cross over. When one simply approaches the boat, the whole ocean of material nations is reduced to the size of the water in a calf's hoofprint. Therefore, the devotees do not need to take the boat to the other side. They simply cross the ocean immediately. Because the great saintly persons are compassionate toward all conditioned souls, the boat is still lying on this side. In other words, one can meditate upon the lotus feet of the Lord at any time, and by so doing, one can cross over the great ocean of material existence. Meditation means concentration upon the lotus feet of the Lord. Lotus feet indicate the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but those who are impersonalists do not recognize the lotus feet of the Lord, and therefore their object of meditation is something impersonal. The demigods express their mature verdict that persons who are interested in meditating on something void or impersonal cannot cross over the ocean of nations. Such persons are simply imagining that they have become liberated. O lotus-eyed Lord, their intelligence is contaminated because they fail to meditate upon the lotus feet of your lordship. As a result of this neglectful activity, the impersonalists fall down again into the material way of conditioned life, although they may temporarily rise to the point of impersonal realization. Impersonalists undergo severe austerities and penances to merge themselves into the Brahman effulgence or impersonal Brahman existence, but their minds are not free from material contamination. They have simply tried to negate the material ways of thinking. That does not mean that they have become liberated. Thus, they fall down. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that the impersonalist has to undergo great tribulation in realizing his ultimate goal. At the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also stated that without devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot achieve liberation from the bondage of fruitive activities. The statement of Lord Krishna is there in the Bhagavad Gita and in Srimad Bhagavatam. The statement of the great sage Narada is there, and here also the demigods confirm it. Persons who have not taken to devotional service are understood to have come short of the ultimate purpose of knowledge and are not favored by your grace. The impersonalists simply think that they are liberated, but actually they have no feeling for the personality of Godhead. They think that when Krishna comes into the material world, he accepts a material body. They therefore overlook the transcendental body of Krishna. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Avajananti Mam Mudha. In spite of conquering material lust and rising to the point of liberation, the impersonalists fall down. If they are engaged just in knowing things for the sake of knowledge and do not take to devotional service of the Lord, they cannot achieve the desired result. Their achievement is the trouble they take, and that is all. It is clearly stated in the Bhagavad Gita that to realize Brahman, identification is not all. Brahman identification may help one become joyful without material attachment or detachment and to achieve the platform of equanimity. But after this stage, one has to take to devotional service. When one takes to devotional service after being elevated to the platform of Brahman realization, he is then admitted into the spiritual kingdom for permanent residence in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the result of devotional service. Those who are devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead never fall down like the impersonalists. Even if the devotees fall down, they remain affectionately attached to their Lord. They can meet all kinds of obstacles on the path of devotional service, and freely, without any fear, they can surmount such obstacles. Because of their surrender, they are certain that Krishna will always protect them, as it is promised by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, quote, "My devotees are never vanquished," end of quote. "Our dear Lord," the demigods continued, "you have appeared in your original unalloyed form, the eternal form of goodness for the welfare of all living entities within this material world. Taking advantage of your appearance, all of them can now very easily understand the nature and form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Persons who belong to the four divisions of the social order, the brahmacharis, the grihastas, the vanaprastas, and sannyasis, can all take advantage of your appearance. Dear Lord, husband of the Goddess of Fortune, devotees who are dovetailed in your service do not fall down from their high position like the impersonalists. Being protected by you, the devotees are able to traverse over the heads of many of Maya's commanders in chief, who can always put stumbling blocks on the path of liberation. Dear Lord, you appear in your eternal transcendental form for the benefit of the living entities, so that they can see you face to face and offer their worshipful sacrifices by ritualistic performance of the Vedas, mystic meditation, and devotional service as recommended in the scriptures. Dear Lord, if you did not appear in your eternal transcendental form, full of bliss and knowledge, a form which can eradicate all kinds of speculative ignorance about your position, then all people would simply speculate about you according to their respective modes of material nature." End of quote. The appearance of Krishna is the answer to all imaginative iconography, right? Is that right? Iconography, that's right, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone imagines the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead according to his mode of material nature. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said that the Lord is the oldest person. Therefore, a section of religionists imagine that God must be very old, and therefore they depict a form of the Lord like a very old man. But in the same Brahma Samhita, that is contradicted. Although he is the oldest of all living entities, he has his eternal form as a fresh youth. The exact words used in this connection in Srimad Bhagavatam are Vijnanam Ajnana Vidhi Pamarjanam. Vijnanam means transcendental knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vijnanam is also experienced knowledge. Transcendental knowledge has to be accepted by the descending process of disciplic succession, as Brahma presents the knowledge of Krishna in the Brahma Samhita. The Brahma Samhita is Vijnanam, as realized by Brahma's transcendental experience, and in that way he presented the form and the pastimes of Krishna in the transcendental abode. This knowledge is ajnana bida pamarjanam, that which can smash all kinds of speculation and ignorance. People are imagining the form of the Lord. Sometimes he has no form and sometimes he has form, according to their different imaginations. But the presentation of Krishna in the Brahma Samhita is vijnanam, scientific, experienced knowledge given by Lord Brahma and accepted by Lord Chaitanya. There is no doubt about it. Krishna's form, Krishna's flute, Krishna's color, everything is reality. Here it is said that this vijnanam is always defeating all kinds of speculative knowledge. Therefore, without your appearing as Krishna, as you are, neither ajnana, vidipamarjanam, destruction of the nations of speculative knowledge, nor vijnanam would be realized. In other words, your appearance will vanquish the ignorance of speculative knowledge and establish the real experienced knowledge of authorities like Lord Brahma. Men influenced by the three modes of material nature imagine their own God according to the modes of material nature. In this way, God is presented in various ways, but your appearance will establish what the real form of God is. Wow, that was a mouthful. So this particular, I only have a few more pages. So this particular portion, the prayers by the demigods, obviously becomes very detailed in terms of the presence of the Lord. And as we are reading here, these last two pages, Prabhupada very nicely describes the importance of the form of the Lord to get rid of speculative ignorance of people as what they think the Lord should look like. There are religions that have different ideas of the form of the Lord, but here in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes specifics. It's like we see here on the altar, Rukmini Dwarkadish, there are specifics in terms of what Krishna likes to eat, what Krishna likes to wear, how he wears it, how he stands, what his activities are. So this eradicates any speculation. Prabhupada gives the example of if one wants to love someone, if one wants a relationship with someone, it's important to have information about that individual. I think the example that we've heard many, many times is just like when a person is requested, please, if you could, give all your money, give your life to such and such a person who lives at such and such an address, but we're not going to tell you what they look like, what they do, what they like to do, and not even if they like you back, but please just give everything that you have, your life, all your wealth, your knowledge, your possessions, everything, to this particular person, and you'll never see him or her. So we can see that that's pretty ridiculous. That kind of thought is literally like a joke. But we see that in a lot of religious understandings. Practically speaking, this is what's requested. It's simply based on speculation. And of course, also on the principle of some type of motivation. They want something. You see, people like to pray to God in order to acquire things, bread, wife, household. So there's a motivation. Just like a person works very hard on a job because he knows that there'll be a fruit, a result. And with that fruit or result, they can become so-called happy or satisfied. So a lot of times there are religions or religious thoughts out there in terms of motivation for acquiring some wealth or good feelings. So religion is a motivator, but there's so many motivators. Money is a motivator, power, lust is a motivator. There's so many things that are there in the material world to motivate one in order to accomplish something. Even hate. We see Hiranyakashipu, he was motivated by hate. And by that hate, according to his ties with his brother Hiranyaksha, he stood on one leg for 100 celestial years out of hate. So motivation is there in the form of hate. So we see that in the world, all of us are motivated by some result. Very, very intensely taught to us from the beginning of our existence. So when we come to Krishna consciousness, it's sometimes very difficult to maintain this high platform of motivation for selflessness, you know, for doing service, bhakti yoga, because we don't know what the motivating factor is. When you come, you don't really get like some serious income. There's not much that you can acquire here materially, so to speak. Although we do know that devotees do quite well for themselves. But the point being is, what is the motivator? What should motivate us in order to acquire love for Krishna? How will we know what Krishna wants? So what is that motivator? And we see that that motivating factor to understand who Krishna is and what he wants is this holy name of the Lord, the chanting of Hare Krishna. So if we see ourselves becoming less motivated, like when a person first comes to Krishna consciousness, they're very ecstatic, they're very fired up, very motivated, because they've gotten a taste through Krishna Prasadam or good association or the philosophy, the knowledge, jnana vijnanam, vijnanam, practical. They're experiencing something practical. And then you mix vijnan with that, samvitam. So jnana vijnana samvitam. So all those three principles are important. Jnana vijnana. We need to have this knowledge, but we need to utilize it practically. So Prabhupada gave us the practical application for keeping ourselves motivated to understand the personality of Godhead as he is in this particular form. And that motivator is the chanting of the holy name. This is extremely powerful in this age of Kali Yuga to understand the personality of Godhead. Even when we read the Krishna book, if one is not exercising this motivating factor of the holy name, one can think this is mythology. It's sort of like Greek mythology, like the different gods. Because what's the difference? What is it that we're doing in order to help us understand the form of the Lord? And what is the motivator? What is the motivating factor in terms of understanding the Lord? If it's not money, if it's not fame, if it's not for lusty desires, then what is it that could keep us motivated in exercising and executing Krishna consciousness? So here the demigods, they're very elaborately describing, like the impersonalists, they want to get relief. They want relief from the pangs of material existence. So they develop severe austerities in terms of understanding Brahman. But Prabhupada here, or the demigods, are saying that this understanding of Brahman is the only beginning. To understand that you're a spirit soul is just the beginning of it all. It's not the end. Yes, you now know that you're a spirit soul. But then the next point is vijnanam, practical application. And this is what bhakti is about. Bhakti means practical application. And what is the motivator to keep the practical application going? What should motivate us? And of course, Prabhupada started the Krishna conscious temples, you know, for devotional service, association, prasadam. We have a lot of motivators. Knowledge, and even liberation, like the impersonalists, one can get liberation. sometimes the Krishna consciousness is seen as a cop-out. You know, people think that Krishna consciousness means, well, they take a look at you and they say, well, you couldn't have probably got a job in a material world anyway. You probably weren't very inspired, materially speaking. And probably, materially speaking, you wouldn't probably get very much at that. And that could be true. But maybe that's one of the reasons of coming to Krishna consciousness. But we can't stay on that platform. In other words, we cannot stay in that situation for the lifespan in Krishna consciousness. Because eventually one will become tired of that. So we have to progress and we have to stay motivated. So the chanting of the holy name is extremely important. And that chanting has quality or substance to it. The more substance and quality you put into the chanting, the more one will realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is extremely important. And demigods here are glorifying Krishna. And that is a process of chanting. That is chanting, glorifying the attributes and the qualities of the Lord. And we see that in Kali Yuga, for us, it's very difficult for us to do that every day. I mean, to every day chant these prayers, as the demigods are saying, it'd be very difficult because we're very less intelligent in Kali Yuga. We're not motivated like that. We're more motivated to, like, prajalpa. You know, like, we could read a daily newspaper from cover to cover. Or get on the internet or turn on the TV and watch the news, like CNN. Even though they repeat the same news over and over again every 15 minutes, we can still sit there for hours and watch CNN. And not become, well, this is pretty cool. And then they have a new headline. Plane crash, or a new headline, robbery. And we go, this is pretty cool. And we can sit there and watch that for hours, literally. But can we speak about the pastimes of the Lord like this, like the demigods? Very difficult, Kali Yuga, for us. We get distracted. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made it very simple, very simplistic for us, that in the course of one's activities, vijnanam, if we chant the holy name, this is the perfect process in our daily life. If we're going out on book distribution, working on the altar, the kitchen, gift shop, restaurant, buffet, even if you have a job, one can chant the holy name and all day long be glorifying the Supreme Lord. And this is the real essence. So here we're reading about Krishna and, you know, he's coming here and he wants us to become devotees. It's in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam Yome Bhaktya Priyachati. It's not like Krishna needs to be fed. It's not like Rukmini Dwakadish need to be fed every day. The purpose of that activity is to make us a devotee. And this is why Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita. It's for our benefit. It's not like Krishna's hungry and he needs it. But he says it in order for us to become devotees. So you can see, we as servants of the Lord, if we engage in that activity, gradually become more and more inclined to wanting to develop a relationship with Krishna as a person. This is the reason. And this is why the demigods are saying all these wonderful things. And we can't understand that by our senses, just our blunt senses. What's that verse? Atasi Krishna Namari Anabhaved Guyam Indriyai. We can't understand Krishna by our blunt senses. You can't. Not, you know, just by your eyes or your strength, you know, by pumping iron or something, getting big muscles, you come in here, you're going to understand Krishna or fight the material energy. No. It's funny. It's ridiculous, literally. But we have to understand that there is a tool, there is a process for this understanding. And this is what's important. Sivan Mukehi Jivado Swayam, what's that? Swayam, Spuratyada, yeah, Spuratyada. It's by the process of utilizing the tongue, jivada, the tongue. This is the tool that we have, this tongue. And to use this tongue in the service of the Lord can help one become Krishna conscious. So we're all looking for immortality. Yeah, every one of us, we're you know, this is like an aim of life, a goal of life, practically. Amritat vaya kapate. Prabhupada says that one of the aims of life is for immortality. We should all want that. We want that. We need that. This is our rightful position, to become immortal. But we can't be immortal with this body. It's not the body that we're referring to. It's actually the soul. So when we're reading the pastimes of the Lord here, it's meant for the soul, not your mind, not your body, not the senses, or the motivating factors of the material world, such as fear, anger, lust, greed, avarice. You know, all these motivators, they don't exist in development of Krishna consciousness. They have no substance. They have no position. So only by the process of chanting and executing can we understand the form of the Lord. There's no other way. So, you see, when we have kirtan, and there's devotees that are totally absorbed in the kirtan, you forget about who you are. Like, the other day we had a really nice kirtan. And in the middle of the kirtan, no one was thinking, I'm Hindu, I'm American, I'm Spanish, I'm black, or I'm white. There was no thought of that in the kirtan. In the middle of the kirtan, the chanting of the holy name, everyone just thought about Krishna and the pleasure they were deriving from chanting Krishna's name. And from that, it was inspirational. The devotees would look at each other, and in the process of looking at each other, they didn't think, oh, here's an Indian. And oh, here's a black man. You know, or this person, you know, or beating a drum. You know, there was no thought of that bodily platform of life. There was no conception. It was completely absorption in the chanting of the holy name. And that is the power of chanting. By that chanting and the sincerity of chanting, like when the kirtan really becomes ecstatic, the intensity and the pleasure of chanting only increases. And it goes so fast and so intense that your body, it can't go anymore. You know, and finally you just have to stop, because you just can't go any faster. You can't go any, physically speaking. The body won't go any further. So then you have to start all over again. And they go, neat. Die, gore. I stopped the kirtan. So, you know, this is actually Krishna consciousness. And this is the science, vijnanam, the practical application. And if we absorb ourselves in this, then we can become more Krishna conscious. And we can understand Krishna's pastimes. Pritra naya sadhanam vinasya chastuduspitam Adharma samstapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. This is the only way we can understand that Krishna comes to deliver the pious. You know, not only does he come to get the miscreants, but he also comes to help the pious. And that can mean us. We can be those pious individuals. You know, he advanced himself millennium after millennium, for the pleasure of the devotees. So, when we read these particular pastimes from the Krishna book, it helps us more to understand the personality of God. But it's very difficult to understand if we don't apply ourselves and we don't constantly try to increase the desire and the quality of that application. Extremely important in Krishna consciousness. We have a couple pages left, but anyway, we'll There'll be some more tomorrow about the advent or the birth of Lord Krishna. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.